We're going to start here in 1 Peter 1, in verse 24, where the apostle says, "For all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man is the flower of grass. The grass withereth, and the flower thereof falleth away." Now, I've known about this verse all of my life, and I've known that this is a true statement that Peter makes here. But knowing it and living it is two completely different things. Now, he makes a comparison here between our flesh and grass. And it's a comparison that we all well understand living in West Texas. I don't know, it may not be that dry up here, but it's dry where I live. And what happens with grass, as long as the grass has good moisture and heat, it's very vibrant and it thrives, doesn't it? But then you remove those two things and it withers away. And this comparison is our bodies, our fleshly body is just like that grass. Now the challenge for you and I is when that happens is we've got to continue to glorify God. And that can be a difficult thing for us. Now if you're here today, and you're young and strong, or if you're old and strong for that matter, and healthy, God bless you. I hope it will ever be that way. But the reality is, unless we die suddenly and tragically, this is going to happen to us. Our bodies are going to fail us, and we're going to be afflicted by that. And we need each other. We need the young and the strong to help us. So I don't want to lose you if you're healthy today. We'll get to that eventually, how that we can help one another and how we carry one another's burdens. I realize that we're all different and we deal with things differently. And I didn't come to Wheeler, Texas to talk about me. But I want to give you a little bit of history just so you'll understand that I know kind of what I'm talking about here and that you'll understand where I'm coming from. On December the 28th, 2013, my world from a physical standpoint changed. And I didn't know why at the time, but there was things going on in my body that were not good. And there was multiple problems, and there was a synergy between these different issues going on that created a real problem for my body. I had West Nile is what I had. It's a nasty little bug. But you know, they say 80% of the people that get West Nile virus don't ever have a symptom. They never know it. It never causes them any problem. But I was in the 20%. Now, I'm not trying to say it was the most horrible case of West Nile ever, but it just had a negative effect on me. You know, West Nile can get in your spinal fluid, your brain fluid, and it will mimic the symptoms of a stroke. Now, I didn't have it that bad. What it did to me is it just took all my energy away. And when I say energy, I'm talking about mental energy, physical energy, emotional energy. I had no energy. And then I got another problem. I had diverticulitis. And that landed me in the hospital twice. And I ended up having surgery and I lost 50 plus pounds. I don't know if any of you saw me during that period of time, but I looked like a Holocaust survivor. I need to lose a little weight right now, but I don't need to lose 50 pounds. I weighed 155. I weigh about 210 right now. And I got over it. Thank God. I got through it. But it changed my life and it changed my perspective on what Peter says here in 1 Peter 1 and verse 24. And one of the things that we do, I believe, when our physical body begins to deteriorate, we want to know why. And so I want to talk about that a little bit. I think it's a legitimate question to ask. But we need to be really cautious and we need to recognize that at every step in the process of our life, the devil is there. He's waiting to insert himself in that process and convince us that God has abandoned us. So let's ask the question, why? But let's not forget the real reason that we have problems in this life. It's not God's fault. It's the devil's fault. And let's never forget that, regardless of what challenges and issues we may come across in life. So why is this happening to me? It's a reasonable question to ask. The first thing is time and chance happens to us. We all have a genetic makeup that's going to have certain weaknesses in it. And we inherit those weaknesses from our ancestors, our parents. And that's just the way it is. Now, there's things we can do that may help or hurt some of that, but the fact is we all have a genetic component that will fail us sometime. Sometimes we make bad choices. And I'll just tell you, I mean, I like to eat beef. I could eat beef morning, noon, and night. It'd be fine with me. And there's nothing morally wrong with eating beef, I hope. But the problem is it doesn't matter. You can overdo anything. You know, and I'm at the stage in life, in addition to these other things I've talked about, I'm a diabetic. So I'm at the stage in life where when I sit down to eat, if it tastes good, you just spit it out. If you want to be healthy, in some ways, that's factual. So when we begin to have problems, it's reasonable in my judgment to say, are there lifestyle choices that I could choose differently that might help my health? Then there's the sinful behavior. You reap what you sow. And we know that we're all forgiven. There's nothing that you cannot be forgiven of. But the reality is that we make choices sometimes that have physical consequences that we can't get around. And we're going to do our best to teach our children to avoid making those kind of choices. But we all make mistakes, don't we? There's environmental factors. There's these weird allergies people have. People get snake bites, spider bites, tick bites. I mean, there's all kinds of different things in our environment that can have a negative effect on our physical existence. And finally, this might happen just because we need a thorn in the flesh. And we're going to talk about that some more momentarily. But, you know, the reality of that is that most of the time it's some combination of all of those reasons that our body fails us. That plus age. We age and decay. Romans 9 and verse 19, here's where we need to remember that there's a limit to to our right to ask certain questions. Here the Apostle Paul says, you will say to me, why does he still find fault for who has resisted his will? But indeed, O man, who are you to reply against God? Do you remember all the bad things that happened to Job, right? And Job was frustrated. And I think can understand his frustration and the difficulties that Job faced. And there was a point in Job's story where he said, I have some questions I want to ask God. He got to ask him. And after that little exchange was over, he said, I wished I'd have. But he did. So let's remember that we're sinful creatures. In our existence in this life, there's consequences of sinful behavior. O man, who are you to reply against God? Well, the thing formed, we're created. God created us. Will the thing formed say to him who formed it, why have you made me like this? So let's remember, there's a limit to what we have a right to ask of God. And just like Job, we're going to get to ask him one of these days. I don't think that's going to be what's on our mind when we get there. Psalms 139 and verse 13, the Bible says, for you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Now, I use these verses from the ESV because they translated this, you knitted me together, and I like that. And the reason I like that is because we know God created us. Right? But how did he create us? He created us with three parts. Body, soul, and spirit. And he knitted those three things together. And I like the way that's described here in Psalms. And we're fearfully and wonderfully made. And that fact is not dependent on our physical body being whole. We're still fearfully and wonderfully made, even after our body fails us, because we have that soul and spiritual component to our existence. That's what makes us fearfully and wonderfully made. And he says, my soul knows it very well. And if you don't remember anything else today that I say, please remember that. Our existence, our relationship with God, all of those things are not dependent on our physical body being whole. Jeremiah says here in Jeremiah 17 and verse 9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? And I know Scripture uses the term heart to mean different things. But there's a component of that word that's talking about our emotions. It's not exclusively about emotions. I get that. But that is a component of it. And particularly when our body gets down, our emotions abandon us and deceive us. And that's where the devil's inserting himself into this deal. Remember where this all came from. God created perfection. The Garden of Eden, they didn't have sickness. They didn't have these problems we have. But they made a poor choice, just like you and I do. And it's the devil's fault. It's not God's fault. The day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. And we know they didn't physically die that day, but they did die spiritually. And that is where physical death entered into our existence. That's where it came from. 2 Kings 13 and verse 14, the Bible says, now Elisha was fallen sick of his sickness whereof he died. Sometimes we have sickness that we die of, and sometimes we have sickness that we get over. That's just the nature of our existence. Romans 8, verse 22, for we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. So what he's talking about here is that everything in creation, since the curse in the garden was placed, has groaned in travail together. We're all in this together. We're all suffering together. We're all eventually going to die. And we're doing all of that together. And he says, he's contrasting those that might have lived before Christ with you and I. We are the first fruits of the Spirit. We enjoy the blessings of a covenant relationship because we have the blood of Christ. It doesn't fix the physical. It fixes the spiritual. And what we're doing is we're looking forward to the redemption of our body. This body's flawed. It's going to fail us. John 11 and verse 4. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. I just hate that. He's saying this illness was there that God might be glorified. So, there's the challenge for us. When our body fails us, are we going to glorify God? Are we going to get angry and mad at God? He can make it go away. He could. We know he could. But we need to learn to glorify God. And that's what we have an opportunity to do when these things happen to us. And we get to show the world. We're going to glorify God. We're not going to let this get us down. We're not going to let this discourage us. We're not going to let this make us angry at God. We're going to show the world by glorifying God even when things aren't great. And we got to remember this. This body can't inherit what we want. It's not possible. We've got to go through this process to get where we want to be. Flesh and blood, he says, cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Neither doth corruption inherit incorruption. Heaven is a place of incorruption. This corruptible body can't exist there. We've got to go through this and look forward to that. We'll have a body, all right. But it will not be corruptible like this one. So let's talk about the thorn in the flesh a moment. 2 Corinthians 12, the Apostle Paul talks about this, and he says, "Lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh." So he's talked about some different blessings that he's enjoyed. And he's referencing that here, and he said, you know, I've had this revelation. The Spirit has revealed certain things to me. And he did that in abundance. But evidently he needed something to balance that, lest it go to his head. And he says, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh. The messenger of Satan to buffet me. We know the Apostle Paul was one of the, if not the most effective preacher of the gospel there ever was after Jesus left the earth. Why wouldn't God just let him go and get on with it? But he ended up in prison. He had this thorn in the flesh. He had all of these challenges that you and I really don't have today. But we do have this one. And it's a challenge. But what the apostle says about that is, it was given me to buffet me. So let's think about that. So he goes on to say here in verse 9, "And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee. For my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." Do we understand what the apostle is saying here? When we're strong and healthy and talented and blessed, we tend to forget God. Happens over and over and over. We become self-reliant. We think we can take care of it. All of those things. And when bad things happen, sometimes it's God trying to get our attention. I'm not saying God makes bad things happen. But when bad things happen, we have an opportunity to remember we need God. And we need to remember how desperately we need God. And the Apostle Paul needed to remember how desperately he needed God. And you and I need to remember how desperately we need God. It doesn't matter how good things are or how bad things are, we desperately need God. I have a brother and sister-in-law that lost a 12-year-old son in a gun accident. It's 2003. Kind of a hard time. I don't know, it was probably 3 years later that my brother said, "I learned I needed God." He was a good guy. Went to church, did all the right things. Do we know we need God? And I believe that's what the Apostle Paul was talking about when he said, "This is a messenger of Satan to buffet me." It reminded him he needed God. It reminded him that this world is not our home. And I believe you and I need that same reminding today. And I hope it don't take that level to get our attention. That level of difficulty. But we need God. And the other thing he points out here is when we handle this right, as I've already said, God is glorified. And that's what he's talking about. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities. Oh, no, surely. That's what he said. Because he recognized it was an opportunity to glorify God. For as much then as Christ hath suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. And that's one of my goals today, is that I want to arm us with the same mind. So if everything's good in your life today, that's great. Arm yourself with the same mind. So that when things do fall apart, you'll remember how you're supposed to act. And you'll remember, this is an opportunity I have to glorify God. Because things are not going to always be great. But we have to arm ourselves with this same mentality. For thee, he that hath suffered in the flesh hath ceased from sin. How do we get to a place where we can resist temptation and avoid temptation and remember what sin does to destroy our lives? These sufferings remind us of that. That he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lusts of men, but to the will of God. That's the mind that we have to arm ourselves with. That's what we have to remember. In Romans 14, the apostle says, for none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. For whether we live unto the Lord, and whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ both died and rose and revived, that he might be Lord both of the dead and the living. So we've got to remember these things. And when times get tough and when our body forsakes us, we've got to remember these things. It's all we got. So I've had lots of discussion with some of my brethren through the years about whether or not we ought to go to the doctor. So I want to talk about that a minute. Went to lots of doctors in 2014, more than I ever cared to. And I want to say one thing before I go any further. If you ever find a doctor that'll pray with you, hang on to that guy or girl. Because I don't care how good a doctor they are. They're better with God. And when they recognize that fact, they're a better doctor. And I have to say, the first time a doctor offered to pray with me, I was shocked. Because it's not very common, at least in our part of the world. And I think it's happened to me once or twice since. But I appreciated that, and I told them I appreciated that. But the whole concept, particularly for men, it's easier just to not go. Now, I've been told, I haven't had a kidney stone, but I've been told if you ever have a kidney stone, you will crawl on your hands and knees to the doctor and beg him for some pain medicine. are certain things that get even a man's attention. Now, I fully recognize that, like some other things, you can overdo going to the doctor. But there is an appropriate time for us to access the medical community. I believe God has blessed us with that. And if we, as a matter of principle, just say, oh, no, I'm not going to go to the doctor. I'm going to let God take care of it. Well, that might be the way God wanted to help you out. In 1 Timothy 5 and verse 23, the apostle, I believe, identifies the medicinal value in wine. And he tells Timothy that maybe you should take advantage of that. And the other thing about this verse, what do we call Timothy? Well, we call him a young evangelist. He had frequent ailments. It can happen to anybody. In Matthew 9 and verse 12, Jesus says, they that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. And I know he's not saying go to the doctor, but he's identifying, I believe, a principle here that it's a legitimate thing for us to do. We're going to talk about some of the frustrations involved in that in a moment, but I'll look at some other things first, because these physical afflictions that we suffer from time to time affect us spiritually. And the longer they go on, the more they can affect us spiritually. In Job 14, it says he feels only the pain of his own body and he mourns only for himself. That's profound, y'all. Because when we're sick, it's very difficult to care about anybody else. And I want to tell you, one of the things you need to do when you're sick is to care about everybody else and get your mind off of yourself. But it's hard. When your body has attacked you and you're in pain, at constant pain, to think about somebody else, that's what he's talking about. We mourn only for ourselves. And it's true of any kind of pain. I know it is. And I don't want to wear this out, and I don't want to seem gratuitous, but the morning that we buried my nephew, my sister, I was at their house, and my sister-in-law comes in, and she says, Mark, her husband's Mark, my brother, said, we need to go. We were going to Plainview for the funeral, but she said, we need to go a little early and go by and check on Mother. Her mother was in the hospital. And I thought, she's going to be okay. This is a horrible, horrible thing for a mother to have to do, to go bury her child. But she remembered to think about her mother. That's hard, folks. When we're hurting and we're suffering, it's hard. We got to fight that, and we've got to do it anyway, as best we can. Proverbs 18 and verse 14, the Bible says, the spirit of a man will sustain him in sickness, but who can bear a broken spirit? He's talking about our emotions here, folks. We probably don't much like the term word depression, but that's what he's talking about. And he says our spirit, our emotions will sustain us when we're physically ill. But what happens when our emotions are ill? That's really tough. And what happens, what happens, the longer we're physically sick, the more difficult it is for our emotions to sustain us. And eventually our emotions become broke. And again, everybody's different. I understand that. We manage these things differently. But when our emotions become broke, we can't get well. Nothing can get well. And it just continues to go down. One of the things that tends to break our spirit is discouraging results. I said earlier, I think it's good for us to access the medical community, but be prepared for lots of frustration. You know, they call what doctors do a practice for a reason. It's not an exact science. And you go and you talk to them and they do their best, typically, we hope. And yet their best is not good enough sometimes. And it's discouraging. And we want to be fixed so that we can be about our service to God. It's discouraging, frustrating. I don't know if I can think of a word strong enough. You got to fight through it. You got to press on. Exhaustion. You know, it's a beautiful thing to go out and do a hard day's work and come home and be tired and go to bed. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a tiredness that you cannot describe. You're exhausted. I said earlier that's the way West Nile affected me, and that's what I'm talking about. I mean, it takes every ounce of energy just to kind of get up and sort of function. You know, and it's one thing when it's physical, but when it's mental, it just wears you out. And we take those things for granted, just like we take everything about our bodies for granted. But you become tired. Fatigue, exhaustion, again, I don't know how to describe it. And it affects every part of your existence. It affects your ability to parent. Karen and I have two young kids. They need lots of parenting right now. I didn't do much parenting in 2014. I couldn't. And bless her heart, I mean, Karen had to take up the slack. It's what we do, right? And there's another aspect of this. When I'm like that, I have the sense that people get exhausted with me. We get fatigued. We do. Way too quickly. You know, we have some folks at home that have been fighting mental illness for 50 years, I guess. I don't know. And it gets to the point where there's nothing you can do. And you just get fatigued. But they need our help. They still need our help. We got to fight that too. I mentioned earlier the fact that, you know, we got to have the mind of Christ to survive these things, right? And that means we have this eternal perspective. And we know that. We know that's factually correct, that we need to keep an eternal perspective. We need to cling to the eternal promises that Jesus purchased with His own blood. That's what we need to do. But that's hard to do when things are good. And it's really hard to do when you're exhausted. And the other thing about exhaustion, I forgot this. Because one of the things that happens to you when you get exhausted, you quit sleeping. Of all things, I can't hardly even function and now I can't sleep. Keep an eternal perspective. It's the only thing that will get us through. I'm going to mention this, and I want to say, when I had my deal, I don't even know what it cost. I was in the hospital for, I think, 18 days total, and my insurance at the time did exactly what I wanted it to do. I paid my deductible, and they took care of everything else, and I never even saw a bill. Unfortunately, I don't have that insurance anymore. It got to where I couldn't afford it. But here's the thing I want to talk about. One of the hardest things people have to face is when they have to make medical decisions because of finances. That's tough, y'all. But it's part of the reality, and it's part of the additional stress and challenge that we face when we have these issues. So here's the part where I hope everybody will listen up, because we need to help each other. And when you're strong and healthy, please look for opportunities to help those that aren't. Because we need that. We need that desperately. One of the difficult questions I had as I went through my stuff was, okay, so I talked about going to the doctor and all that, but what am I supposed to do? And then what am I supposed to allow God to take care of? You know, and I get the theory. In theory, you know, you provide for your family. That means you go out and you make a living and you go buy groceries and mama cooks the groceries and puts them on the table and God blesses us in that way. I understand that, but when it comes to our health, it's more difficult. And I wish I had a good answer for the question. I tell people all the time when they're preaching, don't ask questions in a sermon that you don't answer. But in this case, I don't have a good answer for this question. But that's how we help each other. People that have experienced these things can help those that haven't experienced them before. And we can help each other maintain a spiritual perspective. And we can help each other with the specifics of what we need to try to do to help ourselves. We need that. In Philippians 2 and verse 26, the apostle says, "For he longed after you all and was full of heaviness because that he had heard that ye had heard that he had been sick." For he indeed was sick, near death. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Now the apostle, I believe this is Epaphroditus. I may have the wrong name here, but this was a person that Paul was dependent on. And he said, I needed that. I needed that. Well, guess what? Epaphroditus is dead now. He didn't live forever. But in this case, God answered a prayer. And he allowed this person, I don't know how. You know, Paul theoretically could have just went over and laid his hands on him, right? That wasn't the purpose of miracles, to heal somebody. The purpose of the miracles was to create faith. So, this man was healed, and he was a blessing. It was a blessing to Paul. I notice y'all, like we do at home, have a prayer list. I think that's a great thing. I also noticed that y'all had my daughter, Erica Goodman, on your prayer list. I want to thank you for that. She had one of those weird things. One of those weird, frustrating things that went on for months and months. She seems to be much better now, and we're thankful for that. There's something else I'm thankful for. I'm thankful that there's people that love my children enough to put them on your prayer list. And regardless of how well we know each other or don't know each other, I love people that love my children. And I think we all do, don't we? So I appreciate that. And prayer is one of the most important things that we can do for people that are sick. And it's not just to pray that they get well. That's good. We need to do that. But sometimes we need to pray that God's grace is sufficient for me. That's really what I need. I want to be well. But what I need is to, regardless of what happens to this body. And I want to encourage us to pray for that as well. Confess your faults one to another and pray one for another. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. I believe the context of James 5, he's talking about spiritual things, as evidenced by his first statement there in the verse. But the principle of effective prayer is there, and it makes a difference. We don't need to forget that. It changes things. It makes a difference when we pray for each other. We need to faithfully do that. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. You know, we've got the Apostle Paul with some thorn in the flesh, and he's saying, be content. We've got to accept, folks, there's some of these chronic illnesses that are not going to go away. And it is what it is. And I hate to have to say that. But it is what it is. Learn to be content. Pray for that. Pray that I have that. Learn to be content. Yes, do the things that you can do to improve yourself, but be content. God's grace is sufficient. It is. Encourage and comfort each other. I'm going way longer than I intended to, but I've got to tell you, people, bless their heart, why is it, and I've been on both sides of this deal, but why is it when somebody gets something that we want to rush to them and tell them the worst thing we've ever heard about their condition? Oh, I had a cousin, he had that, and he suffered for years and finally died. Is that encouraging? I don't know, it's inexplicable. Why do I want to do that? Please fight the urge. Think that thing through and figure out, tell your story, but figure out some way for it to be encouraging. And he says, who comforteth us, this is the way God comforts us in our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort them which are in any trouble. We help each other when we can do that. I've already mentioned the idea that we get fatigued with people. Be patient. Be patient. One of the young ladies at church, sometime in the process of my ordeal, comes to me and says, "So, how you doing?" And I apologize to her, y'all, but what I said when she asked me that is, I'll tell you how I'm doing. I'm tired of people asking me how I'm doing. That's how I'm doing. Well, you know what the problem with that is? About 15 minutes later, I was mad because nobody cared how I was doing. And that's just the way we do sometimes. But for people that are in pain, be patient. Be patient. It's because it's hard. Just hard. You know, as he described love in 1 Corinthians 13, it beareth and endureth all things. Don't be like Job's friends. Don't go and start trying to figure out what kind of horrible behavior they had been involved with that created all of these problems in their life. That was not helpful. And I'm not going to read the verses, but God was not happy with them. He was not happy with Job's friends. And certainly don't be like Job's wife. It's hard enough without that mess. Got two more verses. Brothers, I entreat you, become as I am, for I also have become as you are. You did me no wrong. You know it was because of a bodily ailment that I preached the gospel to you at first. Whatever was going on with him, it was the reason that he ever preached to him to begin with. So we had this bad thing, but the result of the bad thing was that Paul had been given the opportunity to preach to these folks. I preached the gospel to you at first, and though my condition was a trial to you, you did not scorn or despise me. Sometimes we get to looking down on people. And Paul says, thank you that you didn't do that. But receive me as an angel of God, as Jesus Christ. What then has become of your blessedness? For I testify to you that if possible, you would have gouged out your eyes and given them to me. That's the verse people go to and say, yeah, they think that the thorn in the flesh was Paul was blind, and I don't know. I guess that's a possibility, but from my perspective, I don't know that it matters what his thorn was. He managed that and glorified God, and that's what we need to learn to do as best we can, and we can help each other do that. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. It doesn't matter what our body is. It's going to be last about that long, isn't it? I went to visit a lady in the hospital one time, and she was a bad diabetic. And that's why she was there. It was out of control, and, you know, diabetes just affects everything. And as we were talking, I said, she asked me about the kids or something, and in part of my answer, I said, yeah, but time flies. And she said, yes, it does, even when you're in the hospital. And that's the point. Whatever this life is, good or bad, it's going to just last that long and be over. That's why we look to eternity. That's what we hang on to and cling to.